attracting new members with technology. I'm an addict named Jeff. And I'm one of you leaders. So let's open this meeting with the long version of the gratitude prayer. How many people know what that is? The gratitude prayer, the long version. It begins like this: that no addict seeking recovery need ever die, my gratitude speaks when I care and when I share with others the NA way. Okay.
So in all your medallions, by the way.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, so the purpose of this workshop is to see what we can do to get new people into the fellowship, get people who are new to the fellowship enthusiastic about recovery and finding a home group and getting a sponsor and working steps and being successful in their recovery by staying clean on a daily basis. And then once they've done that, how do we attract them to service? Okay, so next slide is the 12 traditions, which we're familiar with and chose not to use as part of this workshop in terms of reading. Okay, now, Art, would you come up to the podium here and read this slide so you can be heard in the microphone?
Yes, sir. Try not to trip over the wires.
Okay.
Okay. My name's Art, I'm an addict.
Hi, Art.
When using technology, who do we want to attract? The not yet comers, those who want to stop using, those who have consequences if they do not stop using, professionals that may refer addicts to NA, family and friends of using addicts, newcomers to our fellowship, and members who are not yet actively involved in service.
Thank you. Any comments on that? Okay. So, Steve, would you come up and read the next panel? You want to be by the mic so it gets recorded well.
Steve Attic.
Hey,
Steve. Okay, in the 21st century, new technology is an essential public relations tool for attracting and retaining members. This does not mean that we need to stop using the practical tools of NA has used to attract a member since the beginning of Narcotics Anonymous. Rather, we will integrate the technologies into our service tools. If older tools, e.g. mimeographs, are no longer practical, we should let them go.
Thanks. Who wants to come up and read the next slide?
I'm an addict. My name's Wesley.
Wesley.
Which technologies can be used to attract members? Websites, social media, phone lines, mobile technologies and platforms, apps, QR codes.
Great. Anyone have any questions about what any of that stuff is? Yes.
QR codes
are quick response codes. They're the little squiggly things that you see on almost everything you buy now. And what they do when you scan them with a QR reader, which is in most tablets and most mobile phones, is it will take you immediately to the web address that the QR code shows. And if you don't know how to make a QR code, you search QR codes on Google or Bing or Yahoo or any of those, and it will take you to a number of sites where you can create a QR code. The longest time it's taken me has been 7 minutes from when I had to learn it. So you just scan that information, and we put QR codes on our banners, our tablecloths, our signs, our flyers, our schedules in the area that I live in. And we found that by using QR codes, we have gotten an incredible response from the younger segment of the fellowship, people under 35. What happens is when you're doing a public booth and you have a QR code on the banner or on the sign, young people who are in a peer group, who are with their friends, can look like they're taking a picture, but scan the QR code and see the NA website without having to succumb to peer pressure. Where if they walk over and they grab a flyer or an IP, some of their friends may start saying, what are you going to that foolish Narcotics Anonymous booth for? You're okay. And this gives people a way to maintain their anonymity amongst their peer group if they want to find out more about NA. And the more places we use the QR codes, the easier it is for people to be attracted, because recent statistics show that 70% of the people under the age of 35 are no longer willing to type in a web address on a mobile phone. If they can't scan it to get to it, they won't go there. Okay, so next volunteer victim who wants to read. Yes?
Quick question. The QR codes from your area,
yes,
they direct you to your area?
They go to SonomaCountyNA.org. We have QR codes for the region that go to NorCalNA.org. You just, when you create the QR code, it asks what address do you want it to go to. And you can actually drill down if you want it to go to a specific page on the website. You put in the entire address that shows in the address bar when you're on the website. You just copy that and then paste it into the QR code application.
Thank you.
Jeff, let me make an addition to that.
Thank you, Doug.
I'm an addict named Doug, helping with this session. So you just got into really new technology. If you're interested in that question, where it leads to is UTMs. Anybody know about UTMs?
Nope.
Merchant traffic monitors. They were developed and now abandoned by Google, but they're still out there. And what it does is it lets you tailor the source of your click. So you can see at the back end where the click originated. So for example, if you've got flyers that go out, you could put one QR code on them that would deliver the same information to the user. Then if you had, say, a display stand at an event, you could have another code that would give the user the same information, but it would be telling you that came from the kiosk, the other one came from their computer at home. So there's some advanced stuff as UTMs, urgent traffic monitors.
Thank you.
Okay, and
I don't want to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
I had a question on the previous slide. I'm not familiar with the term EG.
Example given. Yeah. Okay, one more thing about QR codes. Let's say you're putting up a flyer that advertises an event. You can have a link go immediately to your electronic payment site so that somebody can purchase the event tickets, so that somebody can purchase pre-event merchandise, things like that. And so that means that the QR codes on the flyers become even handier and start helping you to build attraction to your event, because somebody can be sitting in a meeting, pick up the flyer off the table, scan it with their phone, and pay for it while they're listening to the speaker. Okay, so, yes?
With the URTs, is there anonymity concerns with collecting metadata on people?
Doug?
Absolutely, it should be.
Okay, so that's the first thing that comes
to mind. We're going to get to that a little later in the presentation.
Yeah.
You might want to repeat the question.
Okay, is there a concern about collecting metadata with urchin? What's the rest?
The wide world of collecting big data.
Yes. Okay, so we haven't had any women come up and read a slide. So would somebody volunteer? Okay, here we go.
I'm Trish, and I'm definitely an addict.
Hi, Trish.
Websites and attraction. Websites should be optimized for mobile devices, intuitive and easy to navigate, consistent and easy to update, websites with good graphics, websites with multimedia, websites with short and simple text, websites that can be reached with QR codes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, any questions about this? See, Doug and I were having a discussion earlier about how most of our NA websites are maintained by people who are on the far side of 40, shall we say. And a lot of the people who are maintaining these websites have skills that they learned in the 90s. And one of the important things about being able to attract other members is what's really hard for me to learn at 69 years old is intuitive for them by just looking at the website and going, oh man, this isn't cool. And they just fix it or redesign it. Okay? So, yes, Amy.
I mean, you're not an addict.
Come on up here.
Well, I wasn't there. We have a question. Yeah. But I can wait too. You want me to?
No, I want you to ask your question so it can be recorded.
So I had a question in regards to the bolt that says websites with good graphics. So my area's website went from, I don't know what they were using before, but it's now a Google Sites website. And to me, it's just not aesthetically pleasing. And I see websites with WordPress, which are like prettier. So I'm just wondering, like I think part of the difficulty in my area, even though I live in a very technology-based area in the heart of Silicon Valley, that we don't have a lot of people willing to serve or able to serve with like a whole lot of HTML or, you know, I'm not a tech person, so I don't know all the like lingo to it.
Okay.
But that
I can address your concern. See, Northern California region has built a Google template for websites that can be used by any area in the region, and it's a very simple, vanilla-looking website. And as a consequence, it's not as pretty as a lot of things that we've been using. And since we're using this template, there's not a lot of room for customization for it. But what it does give is a consistent view of the website with all the areas that are using it. One of the criticisms the public has about NA websites is most of them don't look the same. You don't get the same place by clicking in the same places. So it's very frustrating if somebody's trying to figure out what's the web address for NA where they live, and you know, you're in the middle of nowhere area of NA, and they've used the acronym MONANA. So it doesn't tell anybody where you are. Yes, come on up so we can hear your question on the tape.
It's not a question, it's more of a comment.
Okay.
My name's Justice, I'm an addict from SoCal.
Justice.
So I'm kind of old fashioned in my, I guess my young recovery, if you will. If somebody makes it to the website and it's attractive enough, now mind you, I'm with PR, I'm with PI, I'm all about attraction, trying to get people into being of service. If they get to the website and it's not attractive enough for them to save their life, then they're not ready. That's I'm just,
okay.
You know what I'm saying? So.
Thank you.
Then they can revisit it when they're ready.
Okay, and we've got one more page in my part of the presentation, and then we'll switch over to Doug's part. This is testing websites. And these are some links the first one, test the speed with which your website loads on desktop and mobile. This not only tells you what the problems are, it tells you how to fix them. It's kind of like a sponsor for your website. And we'll make the PowerPoint available to anyone who wants it. The next one is also from Google, and it tests if a website is mobile friendly. In creating websites, I learned at last year's WSLD, that if you set up a website as mobile friendly first, it will then adjust automatically to all the other ways of accessing it. But if it's not mobile friendly, you have problems. Okay, and the next one comes from W3C, which has nothing to do with NA. It validates the code of the website, showing how up to date it is. And now I am going to switch to a couple of examples of these pages being used. So, let me find the right one. Okay, here we are. This is a mobile-friendly test, and it says the page appears not mobile-friendly. First thing it says, text is too small to read. The next is mobile viewport not set, and then the links are too close together. So that makes it very hard to navigate with your finger on a mobile phone. And this, okay, how Googlebot sees this page. This page uses two resources which are blocked by robots text. And does this screenshot look incorrect? No. And then it explains how to make this page mobile friendly. Okay, so let's switch to another one. Okay, this is my area, SonomaCountyNA.org. It has 73 errors on it and 57 warnings. I might have to have a discussion with our web servant. Okay, and the W3C validators are developed with assistance from the Mozilla Foundation. Okay, and let's take a look at one more here. Page Speed Insights. This one, what page did we go to? Oh, this was SonomaCountyNA.org again. And looking at it for mobile, it has a speed of 72 out of a possible 100. And it tells us what to fix. Eliminate render blocking JavaScript and CSS in the above fold content, which means that it's above my pay grade and I'll take it to the web servant. Okay, and just one more mobile friendly test here. And this is Sierra Foothills area of Narcotics Anonymous, which is a very rural area. And what it says is, awesome, this page is mobile friendly. It liked it. And it's maintained by country folk. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is switch over to Doug's portion of the presentation. And slideshow. Okay, start slideshow. Thing. Okay, all yours, Douglas.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Move the screen down a little?
The question if we could move the screen. The screen is bolted to the floor.
Could we move the projector down a little?
That's being improvised. Let's see if we can do that.
So, yeah, we got our IT department working on it right now.
Why is it so dark?
Yeah, and while you're there, you might sharpen the focus, please. Well, you have to talk to the event organizers. Send an email to their tech department. But I agree, it would be nice if it was brighter, but this is what we got. So I'm an addict named Doug. And what I'm gonna focus on today is attracting new members with technology, and particularly new technology. So, the context that I'm thinking of this topic is this. Classic public information in Narcotics Anonymous under the umbrella of public relations. I read the public relations handbook. The first four chapters suggest to me that public relations is something we all do in NA. We do it in everything we do, whether it's formal service work or not. The way we walk, the way we talk, the way we dress, the way we act, speaks volumes to each other and to the public at large, and that makes everything we do PR. Now, I go back to the days where when I came around, Jeff was already carrying the story of public relations in the form of public information work in Narcotics Anonymous. my first WSLD, he was there and he was a mover and shaker and part of the inspirational framework that led me here today. So I'm interested in us carrying the message to those that suffer, and I'm interested in how we do that effectively. So the context that I'm operating in is this, is that all these services we do are for the purpose of getting a potential addict or someone that knows an addict to get a potential addict to a home group, which is the place where many of us believe that miracle of recovery occurs. So my mission is to get somebody to a home group. If I'm working a phone line, that's my goal, is I'm not going to try to save them. I know a lot of us do that. We go out and we do public information presentations to groups and professionals. We go out and we do H&I panels and make presentations to various people that can't get to regular meetings. We work phone lines, we do other services, and some of us believe we're actually saving people by the thousands. And that's nice, that's cool, you feel good about it, but that's not what I'm trying to do. In my work, if I'm doing H&I, if I'm doing a public presentation, if I'm on a phone line, if I'm helping in the background with some kind of NA service work, it's the context of how are we going to get the next addict to a meeting. If I'm talking to you on the phone, I don't really want to spend a lot of time on your story, my story, you know, on why the goldfish died. I want to get you to a home group. You know, where are you? What can you get to? What time of day? What day of the week? Just get you to a home group, and then all of you are going to take over at that point and do what I really can't do effectively in providing those services. What I can be effective about is getting somebody to a meeting. So that's what we're going to take a look at, is some of this new technology and the context of how do we get potential members to meetings. Entrepreneurs Magazine, or that's actually a website, recently published this article, 7 New Technologies Shaping Online Marketing for the Better, we hope. Many times technologies come along and we have grand hopes and dreams which are never actually materialized. In this case, marketing is something we're doing in the context of getting that potential member to a meeting. That's marketing. We're giving them a message and inviting them in. Nothing more, nothing less. Taking a look at these technologies, augmented reality. Man, what would happen if you took your home group, took a picture of the empty room with the address attached, and you put a valuable Pokemon character in that picture?
It exposes anonymity.
You may do that, but at the same time, you would probably up your meeting attendance tremendously. Virtual reality. Well, I am not quite sure how that's going to work into getting potential members to meetings. It's going to be an interesting technology. It's going to have some interesting applications. But a lot of these things, I don't know if there's a place there for us. I guess we could set up kiosks with virtual reality where we would actually be able to put the headsets on and take the experience of somebody who's using and goes through the process of recovery and getting saved by NA and what that's all looks like and sounds like. But it seems like so far we're hitting two for zero with these particular technologies. AI assistance, how many of you deal with Siri? And what's that one on Windows?
Cortana.
So you can just imagine where that's going to go when you start interacting with them in regards to addiction and recovery. The misunderstandings that occur now, you can just imagine in the wonderful world of addiction, where that's going to go. You know, having Siri chastise you because of your behavior.
Siri, I want to use today.
Machine learning algorithm. This is a cool technology. What it's doing is it's keeping track of particularly the searches that you make on your Google or whatever search engine you're using. So machine learning keeps track of that and predicts your behavior based on it. So because you're Googling porn sites and dark web drug sources, machine learning starts giving you addresses of NA meetings. Data visualization. What is that an outcropping of? Nothing more or less than big data. And what's big data? Big data is gathering up a lot of information on you and I. Big data is just a fun business that the people at Facebook and Google and all the others, that's their income model is based on gathering up all this data and taking a look at us. And this is just, it seems to me, this is just inherently at odds with the approach we take in Narcotics Anonymous with anonymity. And the fact of the matter is, for me, if my job is just to encourage people to get to a meeting, I don't need all that big data. Now, if you're using big data, it becomes overwhelming, and the current thing on the whiz bang technology is data visualization, because when you start taking this data, pull it apart, put it back together, and then visualize it so people can look at it, it makes it easier for people to understand. So that's the current technology going on with that. But probably not much going on that we're going to be able to use. Marketing automation. This is where, cool, now we use AI to take a look at what your patterns are and now start giving you feedback based on the machine learning and doing predictions about you. Again, inherently kind of chilling from a perspective of anonymity. The Internet of Things. What's the Internet of Things?
Small integrated devices that are connected to the internet.
Devices connected to the internet.
Google, your
thermostat, your tile, your shower. So everything's connected. Everything's becoming connected. I can take my smartphone here right now, and I can actually call up an application, and I can send a message back home because I've got a connected HVAC system. And I could turn the air conditioning on or off. I could turn the heat on. I could set things. It's pretty cool. The guy that sold me the system, I asked him, I said, you know, what kind of security do you provide with this? And he just got the deer in the headlight look at me. I said, well, what if somebody hacks into my air conditioning system during the heat of the summer? In Fresno, that's blistering hot. And he had no answer because they hadn't thought ahead about internet security issues. But you realize that people have hacked cars, and so it's the Internet of Things. Is everything's connected. So how does that work and how do we use it? Okay, so there you are. You're in a connected home, and the refrigerator starts sending you text messages. The refrigerator says, I realize that a big football game is going on. But what I've noticed is that the average viewer of your metrics consumes 1.6 beer per quarter. And your consumption rate is actually over 3 beers per quarter and is increasing. Please attend to the following NA meeting locations. So all in all, there's some interesting ideas here, but there may not be a much of a future for us in particular in regards to new technology. So how can we make technology work? Well, I think there are some possibilities. The first one is not new technology, it's paying attention to the old technology. This is time spent with digital media, and it's talking about the type of digital media. Mobiles, desktop, and other. Okay, the green on top is mobile, the blue is desktops, and this down here, the yellow, is other. This goes from 2008 through end of year-to-date 2015 when they published this. What I want you to look at is desktops pretty much stay level. Intel got into a big problem because they didn't anticipate the explosion of mobile devices, and so they weren't making chips for all the cell phones, and they got temporarily aced in the marketplace. So what we're seeing here is exactly that. Here's the cell phones, smartphones, and you see increasingly year after year up until now, other devices stays about the same, desktop stays about the same, explosion of use of cell phones and particularly smartphones. Remember, cell phones is just basically a radio that replaces a landline telephone. A smartphone is now a relatively powerful computer tied in with a radio. And so you got fantastically increased possibilities of what can happen. We need to be aiming our communications more and more towards mobile technology. Social media marketing, form of marketing driven by word of mouth, it means it generates results in earned media rather than paid media. I like that, earned media rather than paid, because we are wanting to attract rather than promote, right? So what does that mean in regards to social media? Now, if you're like me, you look around on social media, and there's a lot of crazy stuff going on out there, and there's maybe some crazy stuff going on that has the label Narcotics Anonymous on it. So we got Facebook, we got LinkedIn, Twitter, Content Hubs, Foursquare, email marketing, YouTube, Flickr, SlideShare, so forth. It just goes on. There's plenty of new stuff coming all the time. If you've got a question or a comment, come on up.
Can you just go back one slide real quick so I can finish writing down?
Okay, we're going to go back.
Thank you.
By the way, this presentation, like Jeff's, is available to you if you, upon request. We'll be glad to email it out to you.
Could you just talk a little bit more about the difference between earned media and paid media, just a little bit, just for more rudimentary discussion?
So when you start sharing on Facebook that you like the place where you got pizza, you're not getting paid for that. But it's powerful, powerful advertising, right? You're influenced by the people in your peer group who respond positive and negatively. And marketers know that. Yeah, so it's whatever media. Now, I'm not so much a Twitter guy, but I did for this presentation. I took a look on Twitter, and I went into Twitter, and I searched on Twitter, and I didn't come up with anything for NA, the initials, NA. But when I spelled out Narcotics Anonymous, I came up with a bunch of interesting tweets. And current tweet was some tweeting going back and forth that was related to the recent debates. And literally somebody, who knows if they're a member or not, but they made the suggestion that Donald Trump should be the spokesperson for NA. Well, I don't particularly want Donald Trump or Hillary or anybody else speaking on our behalf. But if we speak on our own behalf in a way that lets us live with our traditions, that is an interesting possibility. You had a comment or a question? You want to come up?
Maddie, my name's Wesley.
Hey, Wesley.
So some more common terms for earned media is crowdsourced content,
okay,
or user-created content or user-submitted content. And it's in marketing, it's much cheaper to employ than when for-profits create content.
And you're Wesley?
Yes.
Thank you, Wesley.
From Arizona.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Okay, so this, let's push on through here because I want to get to something we can try as a group exercise in regards to some of this. So, different kind of social media, and I haven't covered everything, and there's going to be new stuff that comes into the marketplace, and so I'm just inviting us to take a look at this in the future, and how could we use it? So, in the context of this, we'll come back to social media in a minute. Some of the challenges and considerations that I've noticed, this is what Jeff talked about, this is the way I put it, the cultural watershed inside the fellowship and the application of technology. What's a watershed?
Where it all ends up.
Where it all ends up?
It's actually where it starts.
Yeah, where it all begins. Yeah.
So if you take a mountain, and there's some point at the top of that mountain where if a raindrop falls on one side, it goes down one slope of the mountain into one water basin. If it falls on the other side, it goes to another water basin on the other side. Here in California, we've got that with the Kings River system and the San Joaquin River system. And as a young man, I had the opportunity to be at that point on the John Muir Trail that is the watershed. There, literally, you can stand there at the top of the mountain, the top of the Sierra Nevadas, and there's a place where one side is San Joaquin River Basin, the other side is Kings River. That's the watershed. So that's the dividing point. I would say, I just take a wild guess, that Wesley is maybe a little more clued in than some of the people that are in positions that control technology, even inside our fellowship. That might be a possibility. So what I'm talking about here is what Jeff talked about. A lot of times the people in control of services inside our fellowship are not particularly hip to the technology. How many of you have the application that's free from NAS that's a meeting locator? How many of you find it reliable to use? I want to take my hand.
I did.
Okay, I actually am the guy who does it for my local area, and here's what I have to say. It's old, clunky technology, and if you, I can see why people don't continually update, because it's darn difficult. It is not at all what I would characterize as user-friendly, but it's what's available. And, you know, given that there's nothing else available, you can hook up and get the daily meditation, and you can get some idea of what's going on with meetings. Got a question? Can you come on up?
Well, I just wanted to say there is other things available.
Okay.
There's the VMLT, which allows, yeah, we can't turn on the recording if you speak.
Just repeat what he said, oh. Doug. Just repeat what he said.
No, I'm just saying that's a good alternative.
Yeah, but you got to give me the name. I'm aware of the software, but you know, exactly what is it when somebody goes and look?
The Basic Meeting Toolkit.
Basic Meeting Locator Tool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of an open source shared application that's been developed by NA members. Okay. Well, my point is, I'm trying to illustrate here is that we need to be taking a look at getting a fresher approach to new technology. Impact of our 12 traditions. I believe that following our 12 traditions means that we're going to have to make some concessions to what 21st century marketers would want to do. They've got a little bit more freedom because they've got a different mission and goal. And so if we're going to respect our traditions, we need to take a long, cool look at how we're applying that stuff. And then finally, this is something that I think that all of us are sorely lacking in an appreciation and acknowledgement that we come from a legacy of anarchy. I do, my personal opinion is a lot of the struggles we go on with NA service right now, and we have for the last 8 or 10 years, have because we have not really acknowledged this legacy of anarchy. If our leadership had come to the fellowship and started a long conversation about do we really want to keep this going, talking about what it is and how it impacts us, but what you see it play out is the fourth tradition, is people saying that they're autonomous. And down to the individual level, how many websites have you gone to? How many social media messages have you seen that came from individual members that have a broadcast impact, yet they're not part of any service structure? How many of us go and check out with the service structure before we publish a tweet or before we make a posting on Facebook? For that matter, look at all the websites that have sprung up that claim to be NA, and they're owned by an individual with no contact at all with the service system. That's because we have a legacy of anarchy. Our predecessors in 1935 handed out the steps, and it is documented. They said to the world, come and take these steps and apply them, and I'm paraphrasing, come and take these steps and apply them. Nobody's going to come check on you. There's not going to be any quality control. It was up to the world to apply the 12 steps of recovery in any way that worked for them. And we adopted those steps, and I believe along with that, we picked up the tradition of anarchy that goes along with it, that down at the individual level, that we ultimately were free. We're free wild beings to do whatever we want in pursuit of what we believe is good in a service. Well, I've watched over the years, and sometimes that doesn't work very well. QR codes. So just as a little something, because Jeff wanted to bring this up, QR codes, quick response codes, Japanese developed two-dimensional barcodes. And they're just power-packed with all kinds of information. There's a huge roaring debate out there about whether they're dead or not. The fact of the matter is, you can find articles like this one that said only 21% of American smartphone owners say they've ever scanned a QR code. Then you can find another article that says, you know, don't fall prey to the victim of that urban mythology. And then they give you some numbers here that show that a fairly substantial percentage, 34% of smartphone users have scanned a QR code. That jumps to 46% if you own a tablet. How many of you actually have a QR code? Know that you got one. All right. How to use QR codes. There's a little PDF, right? Portable document format, Adobe's version of little books. That's a document, a short document that gives a simple form, simple story about how you create a QR code. So why would you want a QR code? Because people can scan those codes, and they can actually scan barcodes. You can scan V cards. How many of you have V cards? You can scan V cards. You can scan email addresses. You can scan web addresses, and a whole bunch. You can scan those library numbers on books and magazines and whatnot. You can scan all that stuff. So you can go to the store. You can scan stuff and get product information. You can scan stuff in NA. I've used it when we've done conventions to get flyers out to people because they can download this all at once. Yes, we got a question or comment?
Not again, Wesley. With the cost of infrared identification tags, IFRD,
RFID.
With the price of those coming down, is that something that's in consideration to use?
Well, sure, yeah. Because you're tagging something in a way that information can be transmitted.
Right, and then
you
could put that in.
There you go, Wesley, is, you know, taking a look at implementing technology. Now, the question to be, how would you use that, and how would we benefit from it? So, those of you that have a scanner on here, how about this? This booklet right here, I've got it, and I've got it available if you'd like it. And check this out. You can call me on the telephone, you can email me, or try this. Those of you got a scanner, scan this code. What happens when you scan that code, my phone, I put up here, I pull up the particular scanner that I use, I point it to the screen, and by that soon it popped, and what it wants to do now is it wants to send me an email. If I press the button, an email will go to my email account requesting that I send that PDF to me. And it'll happen for you. Well, like I say, you can do it any way you want. You don't have to have a QR code reader to do that. And by the way, making QR codes is incredibly simple. You can Google QR code scanner or creator, and you'll come up with pages full of free scanners that do a pretty good job. Okay, thank you for your life-saving work you do in service for our fellowship. How many of us have said NA saved our lives? That means that the service work that we do is life-saving. And thank you ever so much for that. Now, can we get the lights up a little bit? Thank you very much. You know, it's really nice that you're here. When I came in this afternoon, it was 82 degrees out there. It's a sunlit San Diego day, and you all could be at the swimming pool.
Hey, Doug, I actually have some stuff on YouTube here that I forgot to present on.
Okay.
Okay. Oops, not that one.
It's all right. We'll put that on a business card. QR code.
Does he
want?
No. You're
not sharing.
Okay.
You can take a picture of your smart card, and then you can text message it or email it to anybody that wants it. What I like about it is it looks like it's an ATM. You can make it look like an NA symbol.
Okay, could we bring the lights down again for a moment? Okay, I just went to YouTube.com. Yeah, and I searched Narcotics Anonymous. And the first thing we came to was Narcotics Anonymous, Automatology, 12-Step Recovery Media. Adam T., NA speaker, 12-Step Recovery Drug Addiction. Karen B., etc. And the first three slides are from Narcotics Anonymous events. We don't know whether anybody released it to YouTube. Then we have more Narcotics Anonymous speakers. This one is Jimmy K. from New York in 1984. And what happens is most of these YouTube slides go up without anybody's permission. And then we get this guy here, Manal Khalifa. What I learned at my first NA Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And
stress and emotions coach at manalkalief.com. I just want to shoot a short video for you today. I learned a bunch of lessons today and I just want to share those with you. Had a very productive day. I've been up early and just out and about and I just got in. Part of that included attending an NA meeting, which stands for Narcotics Anonymous. And it's a group for recovering addicts and even active, people who are still using. And part of my training as a substance abuse counselor is to attend these meetings and, get some experience, learn more about it, so that I can make better recommendations for my clients, so that when I tell them, try attending an NA meeting, I know what it's like. And so I went in, just like most people, with preconceived notions of what it was going to be like, and I walk in, and for some reason I thought that it was going to be, sitting around in a circle. I thought there would be more or less an equal number of men and women. I walk in, and all I see is these 20 big, huge guys turn around and look to see, and they see me. So I walk in, and I had a seat, and I just, sat quietly and just really took it in. And something that I really enjoyed it. And one of the things was that there was this willingness to share. And I'm very grateful that the meeting that I attended, one of the guys there has been clean for 8 years. And so today was supposed to be a celebration of him and his accomplishments and everything. And it was amazing to see these men, they're in their late 40s, 50s, some of them in their 60s. Getting up there and just showing all of this emotion and just gratitude. And honestly, this group of men was just so evolved and so aware and, taking responsibility for themselves and for their actions. And it was just amazing to see.
Okay, I'm going to turn off the volume now. See, this is a professional who attended our meeting, and she starts out by giving her email address or her website and promoting herself. But because she talked about Narcotics Anonymous, that's part of what happened. Now, there are over 75,000 of these YouTube videos up there. And I'm willing to bet that 99% of them came from individuals rather than from some service bodies. There are some of what I call the vocal minority that have put up anti-service raps, but there's very little organized stuff happening on YouTube. And Doug was telling me earlier, what if members started advocating on Twitter? What if members started advocating on YouTube, doing 30-second videos, because most of what's up here, you know, we're talking about, you know, an hour and 5 minutes, 53 minutes, etc. But every one of the, everything on here has gotten thousands of views. And it could be an effective tool, but what happens is, how do we do it and maintain our anonymity and also maintain our objectivity? Because, you know, there are people who have serious positions. Let's see, this week I've been called a corporate shill, I've been called a sycophant, and a number of other things because I said that I did not support a certain minority, and therefore I have to be against them and have been brainwashed. So, you know, this is just one more place where we could be doing service. And we could, Doug was saying, we have so many PSAs, public service announcements. We don't have those PSAs listed on YouTube. We don't have them in places on the web where they're easy to find and show you how to get a local resource if you need one. And that's what I wanted to talk about for a moment.
Thank you, Jeff. So now to riff off of that, now this is the part where if you want to see the good folks around here from NAS and the World Board start maybe wetting their panties a little bit, will be what I say from now out. Because how many of us out there are interacting with social media with absolutely no interaction, much less any supervision from an NA service body? So we post, we put stuff up, and we do it because we think we're doing something good. And we probably are. What if we moved into a reality where in fact we started to harness that? You know, in social media, companies hire people in marketing that their job is to use things like CRM, customer resource management. That's a way of keeping track of what you buy and don't buy. It also keeps track of what kind of customer you are. Has anybody been actually aced out of some corporate marketing because of customer relationship management? In other words, you make too many returns at a given store, and they discourage you from being a customer because it's not good for their business. That's customer relationship management. It's also tracking you to keep track of what you like to try to feed you promotions that are going to induce you to do more business. But they also have people whose job it is to keep track of social media, and if somebody puts up a negative post or something that could be detrimental, they've got workers whose job it is to interact. Now, how many of us are doing that? How many of us, when somebody puts up a suggestion that Donald Trump be a spokesperson for Narcotics Anonymous, how many of us Twitter back the basics of why we don't want spokespersons? How many of us are taking it upon ourselves to advocate on behalf of our fellowship? Now, there's some ways we need to do it. I think most of us would see the piece up there by the part of the professional is not the way we'd want to do it, because we don't want to actually put somebody's face up. But there's ways around that. How many of you have seen high-quality NAPSAs that were actually engaging, interesting, and somewhat entertaining? They're out there. We've got some you can download. You can take a look at some of them. How many of you have smartphones with pretty good cameras on them? How many of those cameras will go into movie mode? What would happen if some of you that are thoughtful, concerned members that understand the principles of NA service, what if you got together on an ad hoc basis and started dealing with some of the problems facing us? One of the problems I see is, what do you do with a 46-year-old woman who lives in middle America? She has never seen her, she's never been to jail, she's never committed a crime, caught or uncaught. She has a husband, kids, a normal life, and in that process of normal life, she's eating handfuls of powerful synthetic painkillers every day that were prescribed by a doctor. She does not see herself as an alcoholic, much less does she want to get a motorcycle get tattooed, expose herself with dresses that will show most of her bosom, and go to an NA meeting. But she needs what we have. How could you reach out to her? If you had 30 seconds, if you had 30 seconds a smartphone and like-minded people that could afford an ad hoc group to come up with 30 seconds worth of PSA that could possibly speak to that woman and open up her mind to joining us in an NA meeting, what could you do? How many of you could pay attention to the social media you're involved in and positively react when there's messaging that's not useful to us trying to carry a message? This, you know what, it's going on outside of our service system now. If it's going to happen, why not start to harness it on the basis of members of goodwill who are knowledgeable about what we're doing, have experience, and use each other as a sounding board to take a look. So in other words, you come up with 30 seconds of a little movie, you pass it around to some of your friends that understand NA, and see what they think. Have they got any objections to what you're doing? If you got responses to social media posts that you include some of your group of your NA network to check on each other and maintain quality control on our responses, what could we do with that? What would be the possibilities? I think it's something that's worth looking at, because the world of social media and new technologies is here. It's going to continue to impinge on us. As technology develops, all of these kind of systems are going to go along with it. So a world of interesting possibilities. I'll leave it to you in regards to that. Wesley?
I'm adding, my name's Wesley.
Wesley.
So what I'm thinking about is like in our literature, we have this, there's a dualistic relationship between approved NA literature and non-approved NA literature. And what this allows us to do is we can carry a message of recovery based in approved literature without having to have an opinion on unapproved literature. Whereas in this format, because we're not present, there's nothing we can do about it. Whereas if we did have a presence, then we would be able to carry a message of recovery based on approved material without having to have an opinion about this. And then that way we could effectively, have that dualistic relationship work in a way that we can carry a message in a way that's congruent with the fellowship and the message of Narcotics Anonymous, without having to say that what they're doing is wrong or what they're doing is bad. We can just, we'd be able to carry the message the same way we do from approved literature. So I really like the idea of having a presence there.
Thank you.
Come on up.
Thank you, Wesley. Yep, come on up.
Oh, I can see sometimes. Dale Attic, that scenario that you were describing with the woman, we put a PSA on. It's called The Woman in Writing. It's one of our PSAs. And we had a woman call our phone line who saw that. And my question is, well, what is to prevent something like that from being on YouTube? How do we get those there? Will we be violating anything? Because we have some good PSAs, like you said, that are out there. And some kind of way they would be routed to them. It would be a chance. It's public relations for us to get that message out to the public. It's not violating anybody's rights. It's worthwhile information. So any suggestions how to get that done?
Wait, one question. Where did she see that?
On television.
Oh, it was on TV.
The question is, where did she see that? The answer was on television. So if I understood the broader question, what do we do about that? Well, it's the same problem marketers have, is you usually can't pull down posts, somebody else's post. You can complain to the service provider, you can complain to whoever controls the social media site, but the fact of the matter is, they're usually not going to do anything about it unless it's egregious, unless it is so bad of an issue, that it's, out there in never land in terms of good taste and appeal. But if it's just bad taste, if it's done poorly or done wrong, Facebook's not going to do anything about it. They're going to do something about it if you're using somebody else's copyrighted material. If you advocate something that is clearly illegal, So, you know, there's that. But I don't think that any of these social media sites are going to be particularly attentive to us talking about traditions and how they're being violated and telling them that they should take down videos or posts or whatever. What we can do is what marketers do, is we can counter it. We can get on, and when there's a post, we can speak cogently and coherently to what the real issue is and educate people. Now, for that to work, I think that you and I need to engage in a more massive educational project inside Narcotics Anonymous. And that would be, we take the attitude that it's not just us that come here and gather together, those of us that love NA service, but we spread the message beyond the seats in this room. We take on the burden of actively and on a continuous basis educating our fellow members, educating them about PR basics, educating them about how we carry the message. You know, how many of them are out there are speaking in public that have a shaky, at best, understanding of what a clear NA message is? In our literature, there is a description, there are multiple descriptions of a clear NA message. And we could do a better job about informing people, not scolding them to correct their language, but suggesting to them that if they're posting in public and social media sites, that they use a well-structured message of NA. We could talk about, we could share in the fellowship some of the principles, why we don't put a face connected to a message, why that's not good for carrying the message. We could do this educational project inside the fellowship and then start working on improving our interactions with the public through social media and other things. So another one was, what you got a 23-year-old young man. You know, he was a high school football star and got a full-ride scholarship to college. He injured his knee so severely that he couldn't play, was pulled out for a year. The doctors attended to him, and in the process, he had never been to jail. He'd been a good kid. He'd gone to school like he was supposed to. He studied and got good grades. He was involved in community service work. And in college, when he injured his leg, doctors prescribed powerful synthetic painkillers to him. And he found himself ultimately in a place where he was getting script from multiple doctors at the same time, and found him starting to take pills out of people's medicine cabinets when he visited their home because he was hooked. He never saw himself as an alcoholic. He never saw himself as a drug addict. But he has a place in our rooms. How would you speak to him? If you had 30 seconds, a smartphone camera, and a group of people that could sit down and troubleshoot, how do we script that out? You know, I do some of this in my own life in terms of video productions. You know, that just off the top, something like that, you could take somebody sitting with a football helmet and they just be talking to the helmet. And we could shoot the helmet with a voiceover talking about that story and about how they ultimately found their way to Narcotics Anonymous. Come on down. It's like Price is Right.
Greg. Greg.
Greg.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
We can't combat this until we realize that we are no longer a secret society, and we have to change our attitude towards anonymity, and that's the only way we can battle and win in the marketing game. You know, we just have to find out where that line is and how to cross that line. And so that means we need to do a different interpretation of the traditions that Doug was talking about. Because in our fellowship, there's still a stronghold on what marketing is, you know. So until we do that, we're gonna lose every time. I mean, even the president say, I approve this message, you know. So if there was an approval process for everything that's posted, so they know that this came from the true source, but then we don't have a source to approve that source when it comes down to the regions and the areas. We only have that approval authority at the world level. So that's something to think about. We did address that when I was on a public relations task force, but our document never got published.
it kind of got moved into the public relations handbook. But that's the deal, you know. We have to grow up. We have to grow up. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. One of the first things I learned about public information back in the early 90s is we're anonymous, not invisible. And, some of our members, a friend of mine from Las Vegas, when she was the public relations chair, she started talking about how to brand Narcotics Anonymous and raise brand awareness. And she did a very effective job while she was doing that commitment. And it also created a lot of unity. But back in where I live, we have a public relations team. We threw out the committee structure and went to the team structure, and we don't have any motions, no Robert's Rules of Order, no three pros, no three cons. If we want to do something, somebody says, how about if we put posters in bus stops? And somebody else says, oh, well, we can call so-and-so. And we just discuss it until everybody reaches something we're in agreement on. And, and what happens is if we get to the point where we have to vote on something, we realize that the idea probably isn't mature or ripe yet. So we'll have to come back to it in a while. And we usually have between 12 and 25 people at our public relations team meeting. And one of the things that makes it attractive is we come with the intention of finding ways to agree, but we have a motto. If you're not having fun being of service, you're probably doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. Arthur.
My name's Art, I'm an addict. And I may regret saying this when it's getting recorded. In the area that I moved to recently, about 4 months ago, there's this thing they do where certain groups, meetings, and possibly home groups, have their own Facebook pages. Okay? And on the Facebook pages are photos of people in the group. Okay? And what happens is, like, if I took a photo of Amy right now, I'd be getting a whole bunch of people in that photograph who didn't allow me to post that on Facebook. And they don't understand the anonymity of the whole thing. And I was at one of their meetings, okay, and they did the birthdays, and somebody had like 25 years, and it was amazing, and it's all great. And they all started, you know, taking photographs and everything else. And I said, excuse me. You know, I don't want to be on your Facebook page. Not that I don't like Facebook. Not that I don't like you. And you know what? I pissed off a whole bunch of people. Okay? Because they think I'm an asshole. Right? Because all it is a Facebook page. It's only their group. Just wanted to share that. It's really crazy. Really crazy. That groups are having their own Facebook pages.
And adding on to that, if you are using that type of social media, the privacy settings are really important. I'm a member of a number of Facebook groups where we discuss service, and they are secret groups, which means that none of my friends can see that I'm in them unless they're a member of the group as well. And when a lot of people add me to groups, I got added to 7 groups this week. I checked the privacy settings. Not one of those is anything but public. So anyone who wants to search that group can find out who's a member of Narcotics Anonymous. That can have disastrous results in terms of employment, things like that. I know somebody who actually lost their freedom because their picture got on the internet and they were wanted. And the picture came from an NA event that they didn't agree to be photographed at, and it got made public, and they got found out. And, you know, whether they should have dealt with the consequences of that before they got photographed and arrested is a whole nother question, and none of my business. And you know what? We have 2 minutes left, so Anyone have a burning desire here?
Young lady would like to have the microphone. So, by the way, while she's walking up, with the World Wide Web, there's three things. There's once you post it, you can't take it back. It lasts forever, and there is no such thing as really secret. If you don't believe that, put your naked picture up. Tell your friends to try to find it.
I'm Valerie. I'm an addict.
Hi, Valerie.
And I always tell people with the pictures at like events, just you love apps, put another Photoshop app on it and black out everybody in the background except your friend who gave permission. It's not that hard, and they all love apps anyway. Another thing is people don't know how to use their Facebooks. If they don't know how to set their privacy, they don't know how that if they're invited to an NA event, just block it. I don't want it. Don't like things if you don't want it being. People don't know how to use their social media. That's a big problem. That's what we need an IP on. How to use your social media to protect your anonymity if you want to.
Thank you. Okay. Well.
How about one last one to close up? And what are we
going to
do? We're going to circle up.
Yes.
Jump up there.
There you go.
So we're going to circle up?
I think so.
Well, let's do it then while we have our last
chair. I'm Heidi. I'm an addict from Las Vegas, and I'm the PR chair. So I don't know who you were talking about before, but...
Suzanne.
It's been a long time. We just created a new Facebook page, and we're using a text messaging through Mazio.com. And what we do is we have the instructions on the text messaging under text alerts on our front page. And then we manually load the calendar events into Mazio, and we schedule them out. So we send them out the day before an event. It costs 3 cents for every text. So we're actually at maybe about $30 a month right now spending. But the nice thing about Mazio is we did have to go through an acceptance procedure because they want to capture email addresses to make sure that we're not just dumping a phone list on them. So what they did was they went and they reviewed our website and they saw that what we were trying to do. And the only thing that you have to do to sign up for that text messaging is provide your phone number. And that's it. They don't capture any other information. And we've got a couple hundred people signed up. And as a result, our activity attendance has increased, and we have a very large geographical area, kind of like Arizona, and we're getting people driving in from all areas to attend. And that's Mazio.com. It's like a $30 app, and you can control the cost.
How do you spell it?
Mozeo.com.
Okay. Oh! Thank God it's insured.
But it's still working.
You insure that?
Oh, yeah. Against drops and spills and everything.
Did you stuff in the gym for
us? Okay, let's have a moment of silence for the addicts who will die without knowing about Narcotics Anonymous. Because this circle is too small. That no addict seeking recovery need ever die from the horrors of addiction. My gratitude speaks when I care and when I share with others the NA way.
Thank you all for participating.
You know, I didn't mind having my photo taken. It was just the same.